Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Thanks for two Johnnies. It's Thursday, the 20th of April, and this is Game On. Coming up today, David Connolly on the Final Four in the Champions League, and Manchester United's tough assignment in Seville tonight. Plus, Rebecca Cray is in studio for our women's football slot as Denise O'Sullivan scores an otherworldly.
Brought down by Ratcliffe, chipped in the air, got it away, O'Sullivan! At the death, Denise O'Sullivan rescues a point for North Carolina!
What a banger! We're going to see this. North Carolina once again doing everything they can to keep the ball alive. Sending it in, just doing what they can to keep it, and then boom. Banger from the top of the box after such a great game.
In rugby, we'll hear from the Irish camp as England come to Musgrave Park in the Women's Six Nations, and Bernard Jackman sets us up for the final round of games in the URC. We also have more exclusive tickets to give away to Punchestown next week. And in Eye on America, Jeff Shepherd tells us about Major League Baseball coming to the Vegas Strip. If you want to get in touch, please text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Now, welcome along. I am delighted to say that Bernard Jackman and Rebecca Cray join me in studio. Rebecca, listening to Denise there, well, to the commentary on Denise got me thinking, I wonder if we're going to get Jack Byrne commentary as well. He has apparently Charlotte have come in for a third bid now for Jack Byrne, which would be, I guess, edging closer to maybe what both him and Shamrock Rovers are looking for. But hearing Denise and the impact she's was able to make on her on football over there, I'd imagine Jack would do something similar.
Yeah, most definitely. They're quite similar in the way they play and the way they get around the park. Denise's finish was an absolute cracker by all means, you know, the last minute of her game. But yeah, Jack, look, I think he'll be seeing the money signs. It'll be interesting to see how that one plays out.
Yeah, we'll be keeping an eye on it. Bernard, it's an interesting time in rugby as well with, I guess, they're trying to push for popularity for rugby in the States, and in recent times there's been a few suggestions that some former Leinster players like Adam Byrne and Dave Kearney might head that way.
Yeah, there's a rumour at the moment. I think both are, well, definitely they're both finishing up in Irish rugby. Obviously Adam Byrne went down to Connacht last summer, but just has had a really tough year with injury, hasn't had the impact that I think we all hoped he would have, and his body's let him down a little bit, but still obviously has lots to give. And Dave Kearney has had an unbelievable career, really, you know, obviously in the shadows of Rob to a certain extent. But when you look at actually what he's won, the games he's played both for Ireland and Leinster, he's been phenomenal. And the rumour is they both are looking at going and playing in the MLR over there, it's a growing league financially. They're being very, very prudent. I think the salary caps for most of the squads, or for all the squads, is around $500,000 for everybody, including. So it's not,
no,
it's
big
not
money.
It's not a lucrative place to go, but certainly you could be part of I suppose a competition that seems to be growing, and there's going to be a lot of focus on rugby as the next World Cup in 2027 is in the States. So definitely there's a chance for people to go now to be part of growing the game over there, I think. But it's not a lucrative league by any manner of means.
Has rugby made an impact over there?
No, it hasn't, and there's been lots of false dawns. That's why they're keeping these salary spends so small, because they don't want clubs going out of business. Because the big problem over there is the travel costs. You know, to move a team across the country to play a nationwide competition is obviously very expensive. And we saw the issues that the entry of the South Africans into the URC and European Cup, I think it's 1.7 million euro, was their travel costs already this year. So that's something that's obviously a big factor in American sports as well. But in a minority sport like rugby union is over there, without the big TV deals, they're afraid of franchise going out of business. So they're trying to start small and grow as they grow as such. So, I know some players and coaches who are over there, and Alan Clark actually used to coach Ulster, is coaching over there. Rory Best, I think, is an advisor for one of the teams. It's lifestyle wise, you know, a lot of people are attracted to that. So you're getting a lot of New Zealanders and South Africans and Australians, etc., who wouldn't be able to get into America to work. But rugby gives them a visa and gives them that opportunity to spend some time in the States.
And is it like fully professional?
It's professional, but a lot of teams only pay you for 9 months of the year. So a lot of the players will go and get jobs then those other 3 months, or go back to Australia, New Zealand or Fiji or Samoa, etc., wherever they're from initially. So it's not, very few players get paid for 12 months of the year. So it's a,
I'd imagine, Bern, it's hard though. Like, it's kind of, you're doing things in reverse. So when you're younger, you nearly take the smaller contract and do the bit of life experience and then come back and try and push on a bit. So having a certain quality of life because of your salary and having to change to something quite smaller, significantly smaller, I imagine it's not that attractive.
No, it's definitely not attractive from a financial point of view. I think if you're trying to rebuild your career or get that break, so someone like Adam Byrne, who still has like time on his side, if he could just have a year or a season where he's playing regularly, that, you know, he's good enough to get back into a league over here, you know, the Premiership, you know, top 14, Pro D2, URC.
I find it hard to understand why there isn't somewhere for him.
The market's so hard at the moment. Like I'm getting phone calls and texts every day now from players who've been let go,
really?
Who have nothing on offer, and like some of them are internationals. Like it's the market is crazy, because obviously you have two clubs, Worcester Wasps, who folded, and everyone else is cutting their squad. So I'd say there'd be 150 or 60 less professional players starting in September than started last September. And clubs now have a massive choice. Plus you have competitions like, you know, the Gallagher Premiership, the top 14, where the premium is on local players who qualify to play for England or France. Mm-hmm. It's getting very hard. So players that before would have said, so Ross Moriarty, for example, who's British and Irish Lion, I think he's got 40 something Welsh caps, he's gone to a club called Breve, who are probably only get relegated, so next year he'll play in Pro D2. You know, that would never have happened before. An international like him with his profile, 29 years of age, you'd be looking at a steady top 14 club where you were sure they weren't going to get relegated. So it's very, very tight at the moment. So America would become an option, but also now those American clubs, they're not going to take a youngster. They're not going to take someone who's not proven. They can pick a Dave Carney and an Adam Byrne. You know, so
it helps if you're cousins with the president.
Yeah, that's a big draw, I'm sure. And Joe Biden will be following him with interest if it happens. It's only a rumor, but look, I can see why players would like to go there and have that experience. To be fair,
is the contracting professional game having an impact then on the likes of the AAL?
Well, that could be a result that could get a bounce, because if some of those players don't get contracts, so Craig Gilroy, for example, just being released from Ulster, obviously international, you know, obviously you would expect him to get something, but if he doesn't get anything, and likewise other players are being released from the provinces, Connacht announced six or seven last week, they may go back to the AIL, and that would be great, because there's a lot of good talent in the AIL, young talent, older talent, but I think, you know, any competition who benefits from players dropping down would give it a boost in quality. So that may be an effect. But I think those players, my understanding of it at the moment is from conversations I'm having, is they're all still hopeful of getting deals. And their agents are telling them, look, you will get something, but it might be late, you know.
Okay.
But the soccer market for players is tough as well, you know. And rugby's going to go down that route, I think, now for the next year or two until it resets.
Yeah, I guess it's probably, we forget that COVID wasn't that long ago as well. We're going to be going back to the rugby in a second, but I just want to talk to you, Rebecca, about Mason Mount. So he is deleting his Twitter account. He's moving his social media presence elsewhere because of the changes that are going to take place on Twitter because of Elon Musk's ownership. He's obviously had a really difficult time at Chelsea of late. He's been out of the team. Chelsea haven't been going great under Frank Lampard. I'd imagine he's getting a huge amount of abuse. And just even reading that he's left, Rebecca, I wonder why he was on it in the first place, you know?
Yeah, I think the more you go on, I know Twitter is quite an accessible platform for, you know, famous people and sports stars alike, you know, for the general public to access, which is, you know, it should be a kind of a nice engagement. But I think more so in more recent times, we've seen a lot of those kind of trolls getting on board now. And sadly, you know, it's Chelsea fans who have been giving them that, you know, destructive criticism, if you will, which is sad to see. You know, he's still a great player. I think he just hasn't, you know, been confident in himself, I suppose, over the last season, and he hasn't got those chances. But yeah, even looking at his post that he mentioned about finishing up on Twitter. Mm-hmm. He turned the comments off as well, so he's not looking for replies to that either, you know. So.
Yeah, because I can imagine what he'll get. But look, it's kind of like anything, Bernard, you'll know in professional career, it's never always straightforward. You have your highs and your lows, your good times and your bad times. But I can't remember the last time I read something really positive on Twitter anyway, so it makes perfect sense that he would get off it. It feels worse for footballers than rugby players, though,
it's way worse. But like, also, it's the size of the game. I looked up, like, he had 1.8 million followers, you know what I mean? And, you know, the football world, in terms of supporters, in terms of numbers, in terms of interest, is far greater. And a lot of the rugby players now, they're not on Twitter in their own handles, you know, in terms of Irish rugby players. I think they have an account where they can follow news outlets or people that they're interested in, but they don't get they don't put themselves out there. And it's sad, really, but that's, unfortunately, society at the moment is particularly Twitter is quite toxic, I find.
Yeah, it is. And before we move on, Rebecca, we'll be talking to David Connolly about this as well, but I'm just going to throw it at you now, because it's breaking news that Chelsea have had initial talks with Maurizio Pochettino about taking over at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah, interesting one there. He did well at Spurs, you know, until it came to the end, I suppose. Wouldn't be a bad appointment at all, and be interesting to see how that one unfolds.
It feels like he's one of those people that, even though he, you know, he was sacked, essentially, that he went away with his reputation intact. You know,
most
because
definitely.
All the players in Spurs would always spoke so highly of him, and a lot of people wanted him to stay. So that's an interesting one. We'll be keeping an eye on that. We're going to turn our attention to women's rugby now. Ireland are playing England on Saturday in Musgrave Park in the Six Nations. It's very difficult to speak about this, Bernard, and to preview it when the narrative around the whole contest, and it will be a contest, is that it is going to be completely one-sided, and even suggestions that it could be unsafe. What are your thoughts on the conversations around Irish women's rugby at the moment, Bernard? And we'll get into the actual game in a moment, but from one day to the next, it is constant criticism of the IRFU, of their handling of women's rugby, of their attitude to women's rugby. And then, unfortunately, that seeps into negativity around the women's team themselves, who are no doubt going out doing their best.
Yeah, I was talking to someone today who's highly involved in it, and highly involved in, they're not international, but they play in the All-Ireland League. And I mean, you know, something they said to me and probably hit home was, you know, all they're hearing about how this competition that they play in isn't fit for purpose, you know what I mean? And that, so yeah, it kind of makes them feel a little bit inferior and a little bit hurt, because for them, they're putting a huge amount of time and effort into playing in that league. So, and that's the problem, because if you're, I suppose, disenfranchising or undermining the people who are active, keen, you know, passionate about it, you know, how are you going to actually grow the game? Because you're going to potentially lose some of the people who are actually deep in it, which is interesting. And I know there's a term, toxic positivity, as well. I'm not saying you ignore the issues. I felt sorry. I genuinely feel sorry for this team at the moment, because they are a very young team. It's a journey and it's a rebuild, etc., etc. And unfortunately, they're in the public eye. The first two results, first three games have been difficult, and everybody's expecting a hammering on Saturday, because on form, this is going to be a very heavy defeat. But then when you hear Niamh Briggs, who's obviously one part of the coaching staff, you heard you know, the players that were up in front of the press this week, Dorothy Wall and Nicola Friday. I mean, they're horrified at this talk that they don't deserve to be playing. So, you know, and they're competitors, they want to compete, and they know it's going to be difficult, but that's the level that they want to aspire to, and to challenge themselves to get better. So I don't know where the answer is. Obviously, I think the story that broke in the Daily Telegraph last week, you know, put a lot of pressure, I think, on that current squad. Then they went to Italy, and despite massive endeavour, they just didn't have the game on the day to get the results. So now it carries on to England, and it's going to go. Look, hopefully it'll be a much improved performance. The game will be competitive as it can be, and then obviously the pressure for the Scotland game is going to be massive, because that's a game that hopefully we have a chance of winning. But just, I really feel for that group, and they're in the media spotlight. There's so many conversations going on that have to be had, but probably don't concern them to a certain extent. You know, it's not their making. And then, you know, if the game is, it could be unsafe, to be honest, in some way.
Explain that, because you're obviously a player, a former player, and would have so much of a better understanding of what happens in a game. What would make it unsafe?
It's just a deficit in power, and this isn't about the women's game. So when I commentated this year on Ireland under 20s against Scotland under 20s, and I felt that was unsafe. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not unique to men's or women's sport. That's Scotland under 20s team didn't look to be anywhere near as physically well developed as the Irish team. They got a hammering, but also there was a few injuries, big injuries, right? So that's where the worry is that this English team have been in physical development programs for a long time, and they're just bigger, stronger, faster. And it's a big statement to make, is it's unsafe, but there definitely is going to be a huge physical advantage on one team, and this is a contact sport, so that does make it a bit of a risk. But I hope that there's no injuries or whatever, and obviously I hope that Ireland can be competitive, but if you're being logical about it, it's going to be a very, very difficult day.
What I wonder when I think of women's rugby, and it's purely from observing being at games and in clubs and anecdotal stories and just talking to people when I'm out and about, is where are the players going to come from? Like, we're talking about rebuilding, we're talking about transition. Where are the players going to come from?
The honest answer, Marie, is I think the only chance we have is if we steal players from other sports.
Honestly, because you know what gets me is that I'll meet people and they'll have brothers who play rugby, right? There'll be boys who play rugby, and then their sisters will be there, and I'll be like, "Do you play rugby?" Like, "No, I play soccer." You know, I'm like, if the sisters of the brothers aren't playing rugby, then there isn't enough being done to get the girls into sport.
There was a schools competition in Donnybrook 2 Wednesdays ago, which I was at, and there was lots of schoolgirls playing rugby, right? Yeah. So that was real. I was blown away by that because schools I'd never seen play rugby before were playing. But I also do think for us to catch catch France and England at the moment, there's no way that we have enough of a player pool coming through. And I'm not saying we steal players from other sports, but they would have to be, you know, girls, women who have probably spent most of their career or been playing other sports already.
Like a Vicky Wall, that she was linked
We've had a lot of sevens players were actually elite athletes in other sports already, but sevens gave them a contract possibility, sevens gave them an opportunity to travel, and they're able to move.
The problem is now, Bernard, soccer has given girls that opportunity now, cricket has given that opportunity, the AFL is now given, and that ship has almost sailed, that their rugby was the only opportunity or one of the few opportunities to go and play for your country, and potentially, you would hope in the future, have contracts or else go into sevens. So.
And I think that's been the biggest criticism of when we had, also success sells. So, you know, there's going to be lots of prospective or possible future players watching the game Saturday. And that's not putting pressure on the players, but it's not going to be something.
Yeah, I know.
You know, and that's going to make it harder as well. So,
I can see why Lindsay Peat went playing it.
Yeah.
Whereas now, would I see a Lindsay Peat going to play? Probably not.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very difficult one, and it's not easy to get right. It's not just a case of, you know, start up a team. Like, for example, in Bective, the club I'm in, we'd love to have a women's team, but if we advertise or try to create one, we wouldn't get the players yet. So we're now starting with an underage team and going to try and bring them through. There's not hundreds of thousands, or not even hundreds of thousands, there's not 10,000 players out there that you can just click your fingers and get them into a club. Now, obviously, there's people's job in there if you to try and break that pattern and create the new pathways, but at the moment our player pool is very, very small.
But there is also, and I'm not going to name the names, because I was in a big club recently and they didn't have a girls team, and it was a big traditional rugby club in Munster, and there should be a responsibility, there should be an onus, there should be an edict to ensure that every single club has a girls team or a mini section or some sort of a facility that gives the girls the opportunity to play as well.
Yeah, I actually look at. I understand where you're coming from. I actually don't think that's the best solution. Is the clubs want it themselves? Do you know what I mean? You know, because if they wanted themselves, no, but I know.
Well, then we'd have to get rid of a load of our change board. You know, try and get more of equality on
that's
board.
That's been integrated
though
with the FAI. You know, the club licensing by 2025, all the men's teams have to have a women's section at least set up. Yeah. You know, and I think after I know watching the women's rugby over the years and knowing people that have played within the squads, a lot of them, you know, or not a lot of them, but a few came from, say, Dublin GAA and went across. And I think the attractiveness of the rugby from the Fiona Coughlin era and stuff, when they were winning and doing well, you know, it was good for that 2-3-4 year period. You know, like the Railway Union, I know a few people connected down there, had great wins, and the AIL grew from, you know, grassroots right through and done really well. And now it just seems like it's just fizzled out now. That kind of, you know, the Sevens done really well for a bit of time. And I think, you know, I'm looking now, say, from a football's perspective, where the FAI and people within the FAI have kind of pushed the women's side of things. And, you know, obviously the women's team are doing really well right now. Everyone's riding that wave. And I think that's something now, you know, obviously
the wave is probably broke, some sort of incentive though. Because, like, when you look at rugby clubs now, Bernard, and everybody talks about membership, if you can increase your female player pool, you have more members, so you're going to have more money. So if that was made some way more of an attractive or spelled out in a way, and even if they saw some of the data in a GA club or a soccer club and saw how much females were paying membership, that could try and encourage them to... Anyway, look, I think we've had this
we'll be here all night.
Yeah, exactly. I did feel sorry for the girls. There was a few former players that got criticism because they didn't focus enough on it, but it's actually draining because it's year after year, tournament after tournament, it's the same conversation. And I think there does need to be balance, and you can talk about the game, and we're going to do that now, and also talk about the issues around it, but it can get very draining too, because there's no answers, there's no quick fix, there's no...
And I think, and as pundits, we all know that. We know that, you know, next week is going to be the same conversation. And we're all...
I've run out of energy for that.
You know, and we're all hoping that we can start to see improvements and highlight, you know, excellent play and exciting players. And, you know, speaking to the coaches there, they do believe that that this group have the desire and the talent to get there. It's just obviously it's such a fast learning curve, and it's in the spotlight. There's never been as much spotlight on the women's game, and unfortunately at the moment we're just struggling to bring those players through quick enough.
Yep. Okay, let's have a quick talk about the England game though. It is coming up on Saturday. Greg McWilliams named his team today. Unfortunately, Dorothy Rawl has been ruled out of the game. She's been replaced by Brittany Hogan. She was on the bench for Ireland's defeat to Italy. Two other changes, centre Vicky Irwin and scrum half Molly Scuffle-McCabe coming in to the back line in place of Anna McGann and Alicia Hughes. Of course, when you look at someone like Dorothy Rawl, like, she is what you'd want all of our players to be coming through. She's going to be a huge loss.
Yeah, she's already one of the most experienced players in that squad, and she's one of the more physical. She's someone who you would be guaranteed she's going to bring the game to England, you know, with her ball carries, with her tackles. So she is a huge loss. Look, it's going to be very, very difficult. I actually thought they made some improvement against Italy. Their ball retention was much better. They're just lacking that kind of firepower to score and take advantage, and you know, there's been a lot of talk about some of the Sevens players, if they were back, they'd be able to finish some of those opportunities. But the reality is we have gone for the model where they are quite separate now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that's clear. They're not coming in for two and out for three, etc., in the competition. So I just hope we can show a little bit more improvement and get some positives out of that. Obviously will lead us in then to that Scotland game. I genuinely wish I could say there's a chance we'll win, but you know, I'd be lying.
Yeah,
you know,
we have to be realistic as well about where we're at. No point pretending that things aren't what they are. Quick word about the URC biggest game this weekend, Bernard.
The biggest game this weekend is Munster again. I think Munster to back it up. I think, look, Leinster, obviously they'll hope they can go unbeaten this season, and the youngsters getting a win in the Bulls would be huge for that. But it's a harder task than the Lions. Munster were excellent last week against Stormers, but they go back to the scene of the crime. They go back to where they were beaten by the Sharks heavily in the Champions Cup. So, you know, can they show a little bit, show consistency? If they got a win over there, that would, you know, really make them a horrible draw for anyone in the knockout stage. Obviously, they're going to be away from home, but still, that would be massive to go to South Africa and get two wins. And obviously, you know, Ulster are going to be second, finish second, and Connacht have done enough to qualify, but have a hard game away to Glasgow. So for me, it's the Munster Sharks game is the most interesting.
Okay, Bernard, thank you so much. You're coming down to Punchestown next week, on tour.
Down 4 days, yeah. Oh, so I got you combine a little bit of rugby with a lot of racing.
I do see a tweet about racing quite a bit.
I love it.
But where did that come from?
As a kid, where we're from, Punchestown was a big thing for us, so we would have got half days, and I would have went there as a national school, and then went to Newbridge College, and we got half days as well. So I've punched out a tank for a lot of half days in school, yeah. And I've
easily pleased.
No, I love it. I was in Cheltenham this year and the Dublin Racing Festival. Punchdown is always a great way to finish a national season.
Okay, Bernard Jackman, thank you so much for coming in. We're going to take a very quick break. Football to come next.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. As you know, the Punchestown Festival returns next week from Tuesday the 25th to Saturday the 29th of April, and 2FM will be there as we enjoy one of Ireland's favourite social and sporting events. To celebrate, we have two pairs of Flexi Reserved Enclosure tickets to give away. As the name suggests, these tickets are flexible so they can be used on the day of the winner's choice. Enjoy all the extras of the Reserved Enclosure with amazing trackside viewing, live music, bars and style. To be in with the chance to win, just answer the following question. What horse has won the last two champion hurdles at Punchestown? Is it A, Honeysuckle, or B, Dandelion? Text your answer, name and email address to 51552 and the winner will be announced at the end of the show. Laura Lee comes up with the best questions for these competitions. Always gives me a giggle. Now we are going to return it to football now. David Connolly joins me on the line. David, how are you?
I'm good. How are you too? You well?
Yeah, we're all good. We were chatting about Pochettino potentially going to Spurs. Sky Sports reporting that he's had some initial talks with the club. Does he seem like the right fit for you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think he's an incredible manager. I left Southampton and a few months later he came into Southampton, you know, and I still talk to some of the lads that were there under him. Everybody raves about him. You know, he is, I think, an exceptional manager. I know he's been out of work for a little while, but, you know, he's absolutely class. I think he'd be brilliant. I really do. And, you know, so detailed in his work. He can be ruthless at times. Like, I've heard stories about how he's dealt with players. He comes across as if he's all nice, but he can be absolutely ruthless behind the scenes.
Wow.
He almost like was sleeping at the training ground at Southampton. You know, he was a workaholic. You know, everyone tells me that, you know, he'd be there 6-7 o'clock in the morning. He'd be there till God knows what time at night. And, you know, I think, When you're built like that, I think you're destined for good things. So I think it'd be a great appointment.
And do you think that just given the chaos that's there at the moment, the egos, like think about PSG and how difficult it was managing all of those big names and trying to get the best out of them, is it a bit of a poison chalice?
Look, it might be. I mean, that's the challenge, right? Whoever comes in there, and also, you know, new ownership, etc. You know, what will they do in terms of players going, leaving, contracts? But look, you put all that to one side, he's worked at a couple of clubs now, for the PSG one, the Southampton, Tottenham, worked with directors of football, he's worked with big squad, he's worked with world-class players. And I think from the outside, it's always easy to say PSG, you know, maybe he couldn't handle egos or couldn't handle this. I think PSG is a kind of an anomaly in football, because there's not too many other clubs like that, especially the you know, the challenges you face. You know, you heard, like, was he in control of who picked the team or who signed? I don't know. I mean, look, long and short of it is, brilliant manager. He'd be fantastic.
Yeah, I think I'd be delighted to have him back anyway. I was always a big fan. Great addition to the league. So, David, just let's have a look at the Champions League. We now know who is going to be contesting the semi-finals. Let's start with Real Madrid and Manchester City, because it feels like they're the two teams that everyone is going to be glued to for quite obvious reasons. City last night, were you impressed with them? Or they just continued as they always are, bar Haaland's penalty?
Yeah, I mean, look, they looked pretty comfortable, right? I mean, they never looked in danger, to be honest. They never looked in danger, even after missing the pen it was almost you felt another chance might be coming their way. So I guess Real Madrid and Man City look like the ones to beat. They've looked so calm and in control that, you know, they almost looked like, you know, kind of strolling the park, really. And I was amazed at Bayern Munich, you know, that the stadium was still packed. They were 4-0 down or whatever, and no one had left. I was thinking, geez, you know, you're losing 4-0, you're going out. I thought everyone would be getting off home. But, I mean, you know, credit to them, they all stayed. But, no, I can't see anyone. I can't see, the, you know, those two. Whoever's going to beat one of those two is obviously going to win it.
Yeah, Rebecca, what did you make of City?
Yeah, same as David, more so. I know there's a few kind of instances throughout the game, you know, and they could have scored. You know, there was a few threats, nothing too troubling, I suppose, for Ederson. You know, that sending off for what was his name, Upamecano? I can never pronounce it. But he was saved by the offside of Haaland, which was an interesting kind of period in the game. But yeah, like that, look, City were home and dry, I think, even before the game started, to be honest, for me. So it'll be interesting to see how we get on for the last few weeks. Yeah,
it's going to be fascinating, because it's nearly a cliche at this stage, David, that the only one that can ruin it for Pep will be Pep himself if he decides to go a little bit tactically crazy. But just given, I guess, how solid they've been over the last while and what Haaland's been doing, if anyone's going to undo the Champions League for him, it probably will be Real Madrid, if not himself. Yeah. But he does seem to probably, or like, I'd imagine he's learned a lot from last year.
Yeah, look, I'm sure he does, right? And he's obviously an incredible coach. I mean, people talk about John Stones playing in midfield, right? And they think that John Stones, this is the only time John Stones has done this. I worked on Oxford United v Man City 2018. 2018, well, he played John Stones in midfield. And I remember coming away from that going, John Stones, why is he? And look, he didn't do well. Don't get me wrong. He looked really uncomfortable, he lost the ball a lot, but the point being, it was embedded in his mind so long ago, because Pep is so forward thinking. Yeah. You know, the day might come where he can then evolve how he plays, and Stones could possibly play that role. So look, he's an absolute master of his craft, we know that. Will he do anything different? What you're saying is against a Real Madrid or in the I'm not so sure how we deal with the wingers, and Benzema would be the key to winning the game, because the two wingers are incredible. You know, Vinicius and Rodrigo,
yeah, they are,
tormented Chelsea out wide, right? I don't know what Becca thinks, but they absolutely tormented them. It's, I mean, it looked like they were on a completely different world, those two. So how you deal with them will be, because Benzema had an off night. He was a bit quiet, wasn't his usual self. But the wingers, wow, I mean, how you stop those two would be the key, I think, to winning anything.
And Haaland, missing the penalty, he's not superhuman.
He's not a robot. Yeah, I guess, look, you would say there was a couple of things, I don't know what Becker thinks, but, you know, Goretzka picking something up on the pitch saying, you know, did someone throw that? Do you remember? I think he said there was a bit of something on the floor, so it delayed taking of the kick, and all this was all mind games. And look, he is human after all, right? I mean, you know, Ivan Toney missed one.
Yeah.
Just recently for Brentford, who hadn't missed one. Look, we're not robots, yeah? We're all human, even the very, very best. So, look, he recovered. He scored another great goal. Yeah. But
keeps it interesting.
You know,
still has 48 goals this year.
I think we were talking yesterday about which is the better game to watch if you had to pick one, and it's hard not to watch Man City, but anyone I think that tuned into watching Inter and Benfica were probably really entertained. 3-3, David.
Yeah, great game. I mean, look, these two, I mean, it's going to be them against AC Milan is going to be a fantastic occasion. You know, it really is, because you know, Inter showed their quality, ironically, right? Inter and AC, they've got former Chelsea strikers scoring the goals, you know, and obviously Chelsea can't sort of hit a barn door, but that was a great game between those two. And I think whoever comes out on top in that one, it's great for Italian football. You know, it's great for Italian football to have both those two in. Tough one to call, because on their day, look, Leao, quality, so quick. Giroud scores goals everywhere. And you got Inter, who are probably, I think, a better team, maybe don't quite have the real one flair player like a Leao who can really make a difference.
Tonight, David, Manchester United in action against Sevilla, 8 o'clock, 2-2 on aggregate. A tough encounter for them, or should they be all right?
Well, they should be all right, shouldn't they? You know, they should be all right, but they absolutely messed it up, didn't they?
Yeah.
I mean, 2-0 up, cruising. And to be fair, right, if you've watched United of late, they're brilliant against Everton. They were absolutely superb against Forest, you know. And you think, right, that first sort of 45 against Sevilla, geez, United are in fantastic form. They kind of threw it away. I think they'll be okay. Saying that, Sevilla had a good win at the weekend. They won 2-0, beat Valencia. Mm-hmm. They've got, you know, Enesiri, Ocampo. They've got a couple of players who can hurt them. But, you know, for United tonight, I imagine, you know, who comes in to the side? No Bruno Fernandes, you know, yeah. So who comes in for him? Sabitzer, probably, I imagine. Eriksen, maybe. But Shaw might be back. Rashford probably on the bench. I think they'll have more than enough.
And just in terms of their season, is this important to them?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, do you know what? I mean, they could have three trophies, right? They could have three trophies at the end of this season, couldn't they? No, I know you laugh.
Yeah, I know.
It could be far-fetched, but it's obviously possible. You know, it's possible. They got the first one in the bag. They've got a difficult FA Cup semi, and they'll probably play City if they got that far. But at Wembley, you never know. And then, you know, who could they face in the Europa League? I mean, Juventus might be next if they get through. Juve, you know, are not the Juve of old. Or you know, so why not? This could be a part, early part this week could be huge for Erik ten Hag. You know, he could walk away with, you know, three trophies this year. Two would be fantastic. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think especially when you start look at where they were at the start of the season to where they are now, it would be it would be success for them, no doubt. David, thank you as always for joining us, and we'll talk to you again very soon. We're going to turn our attention now to the Women's Champions League quarterfinals, which are coming up in this weekend, actually. So we have Wolfsburg and Arsenal and Barcelona and Chelsea. And of course, we would have a big interest in how the Arsenal game goes because of our own Katie McCabe playing for them. But Wolfsburg knocked out Arsenal in the quarterfinal stage of last season's competition. Arsenal will be out for revenge though, Rebecca?
I'd like to hope so, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's been a quite a tough season for them injury wise this year, you know, with the likes of Miedemann, Beth Mead being out, and now most recently looking at Leah Williamson last night limp off the pitch 15 minutes in. Yeah. So, you know, they're pretty much bare bones at the minute, you know. I know Katie didn't play yesterday, so I'm sure she's raring to go for that game. But look, it's gonna be very tough. I'll be over at the home leg myself, so I'm dying to see that, just a bit of Champions League football with two quality teams going at it. But I just hope that their lack of starting players doesn't hamper their chances too much.
And Chelsea and Barcelona then, I actually was at the quarterfinal against Lyon. It was an absolutely cracking game, got penalties and all the rest, some huge players playing for both teams. Like this is probably the one I'd go to.
Oh yeah, like, I think I'd be the same. I know one of the girls is going over herself for the home leg of Chelsea's, but look at the Barca team. It's, you know, you don't have to mention players to know how great they are. A lot of familiarity as well with the English girls, Kira Walsh and Lucy Bronze there, and obviously playing against the likes of Lauren James and that, you know, it's going to be a quality fixture. Two English teams as well in the semi-finals of the Champions League, which hasn't been seen for a while as well. So, yeah, I honestly can't call that leg.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more of a tighter occasion, I'd say.
Yeah, and I feel like we're kind of talking about the same thing all the time, but it feels with every passing year, though, that the quality of women's football at this stage is increasing all of the time. It's a testament really to the investment that there has been in women's football, because we're seeing so many good players now coming into the game and excelling and strengthening it, and the standards have been raised and everybody is joining up. It's not like you'd have one star player and you'd be just watching them all of the time. There is 11 star players on every team now at this level.
Yeah, most definitely. Like, I think I know in the Spanish leagues, the likes of Barca are kind of the front runners, obviously with Real Madrid there as well. But like the amount of investment that's gone in the English league, you know, the WSL, it's testament to it, looking at the win that England had in the Euros last year. You know, a lot of them just came through those leagues, obviously. And they've really pumped it in. Obviously, I know the likes of ourselves here, we kind of look at the IRFU and the kind of position they're in. You know, the FAI have done, you know, we've a lot more female coaches on board now, pushing female only camps, you know, and we're trying to get on that, I suppose. There's a lot of traction in women's football in Europe currently. So look, we've a long way to go ourselves, but it's great to see, you know, across Europe that, that women's football is definitely doing really well currently.
Yeah, because when I went to the Chelsea Lyon game and I was coming home and I was just telling people, you know, I was at it and people that wouldn't be that interested in women's football, and I was saying that Ada Hegerberg was playing and Wendy Renard and Lauren James, and, you know, I was trying to explain, it's you're watching the best players in the world. It's like going to watch Messi and Ronaldo and Neymar all on the same pitch. Like that's what you're getting if you go to see one of these games. It was brilliant. Let's have a chat about the Women's National League. Chelsea's got a good win. I think all wins now at this stage are important. 1-0 against Treaty, and Noel King was speaking after it. Let's hear from him.
Noel, heart fought. If there was a 1-0 hammering, that was his, but still heart mouth. Football never ceases to amaze imagination.
1-0 hammering, I never heard that before. But it was we had total possession. They conceded ground on us and they were very difficult to break down. We did have lots of chances in the game, didn't finish them, missed a penalty. But in days like that, in experience, I will tell you that you could drop points very, very quickly and very easily. And I'm very thankful that that didn't happen. I think the girls worked hard in the game and just didn't work for them. But as I said, we got the 3 points. So
you showed all your exposure, your character, your experience, you know, into managing a game, because those type of games can be tricky.
Absolutely, yeah. You could see from the second half, particularly. I mean, we had gone in 1-0 and we were dominant and we had had chances and we had tap ins. And then when you missed the penalty, then you think, oh, this is not to be today. And it didn't look like they had one chance that could have spoiled us all, and we'd have dropped 2 points.
There was I think it was awarded for free kicks, one ball over the top as well there at the end. That was like, I was nearly going to say, oh no, surely not.
Surely not, you remember it, yeah. It seemed to be a long time before it bounced to safety, but that's the beauty of the game, and everyone is saying, inside and outside the dressing room, that this is an easy one for Shelbourne. This is proof positive that there's no such thing as that in football.
I can imagine you can remind you.
Hopefully we learn from that. That's the thing. Learning without the loss of points would be nice. And let's hope we do.
As a whole, it seems like the league is getting, you know, it's growing all the time. Teams that, you know, I suppose Treaty are a prime example of that. You know, you comprehensively defeated them last season. There's a lot closer today. But the league, it seems to be getting more and more competitive, more and more interest. As a whole, it's wonderful to see.
Yeah, it's not easy anymore. There's no, not anymore. It never was easy in my view, and anyway, because everyone wants to beat everybody. But you're right, the standard has improved. A number of clubs around, they've brought in players from outside, which is a good thing for us, I think. And it's a good thing for the league that people are going out not knowing who's going to win the games. And that's what you want.
Absolutely, that's what you want. Rebecca Craig, that was Noel King there speaking after Shelbourne's win over Treaty. P-Man still top of the table, consistently going along, doing their business as we were expecting them to, but they have a big game against Wexford Utes. Well, I mean, traditionally it'd be a big game, but just going on Wexford Utes' form so far this season, it might not be as we're expecting it to.
Yeah, it's been a weird one for Wexford, you know. Looking, I think that's probably the lowest they've been position-wise in the league, in eighth in a long, long time. I don't think anyone would have called that. I don't know what it is. I know I watched the game there the other day with Athlone and themselves. You know, Athlone were fantastic. You can't say anything different than that. Dana Sharif, I think it's Sharif, for Athlone was fantastic. I don't know if you've seen the third goal she got, but, you know, it was absolutely brilliant. But Wexford, they just looked a little bit sluggish, you know. I don't know how I feel about Emily Corbett and Rihanna Jarrett up top together.
Yeah, tell me about that now, because when Emily moved to Wexford, I was very excited about it because she had obviously done so well last year and there was so much talk about where she was going to end up. And then Rihanna came and I thought, well, you know, they're going to be banging in the goals.
Yeah.
Doesn't always work out like that.
I think everyone was. I think, you know, looking at it, we were all kind of like, oh, here we go. You know, it's going to be a goal fest. And I think maybe when Emily did sign with them, she was probably thinking, right, I'm the nine here. I can go and get the goals. But I think when you've got two players like themselves, they're quite similar in how they play. Mm-hmm. You know, like to hold the ball up, bring other players in. It just doesn't seem to be working for me. I know when Emily was at Lone, I should say, was playing high. She had Maddie Gibson in behind her and they worked really well. Mm-hmm. But she just looks a little bit lost at the minute. And it'd be interesting to see how that plays out now coming into summer. You know, transfer windows, they do open.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if it's something that she sticks with. for the rest of the year or not.
Especially because there could be movement in other clubs as well with girls finishing the leaving cert and all that sort of stuff. You don't know where people are going to go.
Yeah.
So then this weekend, it's been touted as a Dublin derby, and I know Shamrock Rovers and Bowes is a Dublin derby, but in the women's game it doesn't feel like it has the same.
I don't think it's established enough, Shamrock Rovers are established enough in the women's game just yet.
Give it a bit of time.
You know, the likes of Peamount Shells now might be the Dublin derby.
We need a few bloodbaths first up there. Exactly,
a few fisticuffs.
Yeah. But they are, look, I mean, it is actually getting quite a good bit of coverage as well, and it's been built up and it's been marketed. So, I mean, hopefully we get a good game.
That's always great, you know. We can push for that all day, you know. We can call it what you want, just get seats or bums on seats and you know, eyes on the telly. And look, that'll be another great game, you know. They'll fight it out. Rovers are still unbeaten currently, so it'll be interesting to see how Bowes do against them.
Yeah, so Rovers third on the table, still unbeaten, as you said. Peamount top, Shelburne and then Galway fourth, Bowes fifth. So, I mean, third v fifth.
Exactly, could go anyway.
Rebecca, thanks so much. We're going to take a very quick break. Do stay with us because we have American sports to come and we might get some Manchester United team news.
Game on 2FM.
It's time to turn our attention to US sports, and I'm delighted to say that Jeff Shepherd joins us now on the line. Shep, how are you?
I'm great, Marie. How are you?
That's great to talk to you. I haven't talked to you in a little while, so good to catch
up.
It's
been a minute, yeah.
It has been a minute, definitely. And as always, plenty going on. Interestingly enough, we're going to talk about concussion now, and Miami Dolphins quarterback Tua Tagovailoa has said that he thought about retiring because he'd suffered multiple concussions in the past season, and we did cover that quite a lot, and we saw him out and in and then back, and we weren't sure if he was going to be playing, and then he was playing, and it was quite controversial. And I can understand why he would consider retiring, although I can see why he'd be still playing as well, because he gets paid so much.
Right, and that's kind of the conundrum he's in, I guess, right? Yeah, I mean, to your point, Marie, you know, we have talked about player safety and concussions, and you know, Tua kind of became the poster child of this discussion last year. You know, he basically, you know, they think he suffered back-to-back concussions in games, and it led to an internal investigation and a doctor getting fired who cleared him. Mm-hmm. And then he was injured later again at the end of the season. And he said, yeah, you know, he spent a lot of time in the off season thinking about his future. He also said he took up judo to learn how to fall properly and try to avoid maybe landing directly on his head. Now, in judo, I mean, I don't do it that often, and by often, I mean never, but like a 300-pound man landing on you in judo and throwing you to the ground. I don't know how much of that you can – I hope he can take some of that and, you know, shift it over into his football game. I mean, look, it's serious. I mean, you know, we saw Andrew Luck walk away from the game a couple of years ago, and he didn't outright say it was concussions, and it wasn't concussions. It was just overall health and kind of the amount of money he'd already made. And we've seen some players, you know, we've seen more players in recent years walking away from the game at the age of 25, 26 years old. And they've basically said, yeah, I mean, I see where this is heading, and I don't want to go down that path. And they got out while they could. Tua has decided to stick around a little bit longer. There are some new helmets that are going to be available to quarterbacks that'll have a little bit more, you know, concussion-proof, quote-unquote, padding in there. And so we'll see, maybe does he wear one of those, and, you know, does he learn how to fall in a different way? But, I mean, to your point, it's obviously a big decision that he's had to make, and at least he's having the thoughts and the conversations with his friends and family.
Yeah, and at least he's airing his concerns as well, because they're, you know, he's somebody that people look to all of the time because
that's
he's
right.
in such a high-profile position. And to even consider the fact that he might have been flippant about it would have been worrying, but the fact that he isn't is it's quite reassuring. At least he's getting the right advice anyway, it seems. Let's move on though, Shep. I'm really excited about this story. The Oakland Athletics have signed a binding agreement to purchase land near the Las Vegas Strip where they intend to construct a major league ballpark. The team president has said this. This could be exciting.
Absolutely. Look, I mean, think back to what the Las Vegas Raiders did just a couple of years ago. They basically did the same thing. You know, they left Oakland in this, you know, the California Northern Bay area in San Francisco and went down to Las Vegas, brand new stadium. You know, look, there are bigger ramifications when you come to talking about people moving out of California and where are they moving to. The A's, you know, and the, you know, the Raiders are played in the same stadium. It's a bad stadium. the Rays might have, I mean, excuse me, the A's might have 5,000 people a night at a baseball game. I mean, their attendance is atrocious. The county has basically told them they're not going to give them any help in any kind of public funding. And, you know, owners want to get as much public funding as they possibly can. They're not going to get full funding in Las Vegas, but they're going to get a brand new, you know, billion-dollar stadium, retractable roofs, going to seat 35,000 people. And, you know, Marie, let's just be honest. People go on vacations to Las Vegas to go. They can go watch baseball games there. No one goes to a vacation in Oakland. Like, yeah. It just, you know, it's just the demographic situation at this point. You know, it makes sense for the A's on all bases of financial points, you know?
Yeah. Chep, thank you. We're out of time. It was quick. It was short. It was sweet. It was good to do
it.
That's
right.
Thanks, Shep. We'll talk to you very, very soon.
Good chat.
Rebecca, before we finish up, any team news for Manchester United?
We do indeed. Yeah, with the starting lineup there, all in numerical order. We've got De Gea in goal, Lindelof, Maguire, Martial, Eriksen, Sabitzer, Casemiro, Dalo, Anthony, Sancho and Wan-Bissaka.
Oh, very good. Okay, we'll be reflecting on that game tomorrow. Rebecca, thank you so much. We also have the answer for our competition. It was, of course, Honeysuckle. And today's winner is Paul Cummins from Waterford. So tune in tomorrow for your final chance to win those tickets. That is all we have time for. Rebecca, thank you for coming in. We'll be back tomorrow. Plenty to look forward to. Bette De Silva is up next.
RTE 2FM.